everybody. Welcome to Terror Talk.
I'm excited to do this episode.
I know. So today on the show, we are going to talk about black horror.
There's so much history here and the origins. We're definitely not in favor of the black community.
No.
And then the way that the black community reestablished it through time. Just an interesting story.
Yeah. So I want to lead off by saying that Kathy and I are not black, and we do not identify with that community in a felt sense, meaning I did not. I had the, as a white person, I had the privilege of being able to grow up and see myself in television and film. And I know that when you are able to grow up and see yourself represented in television and film, that is a privileged existence. There's a privilege in that. And so I do not know what it's like to grow up and be a person who watches horror and by and large is the first person killed or is not the hero or is always the bad guy or all of the other marginalization that's gone on for black people in horror. So I do not know what that's like as a felt sense. I think we're approaching this episode today, obviously knowing that and owning that, but also being a huge fan of a lot of films that would be considered black horror.
For sure.
And so finding a way to talk about the history and learn about it and the knowledge and having our own investigation of that is something that we enjoy and like. And so I just didn't want that to be interpreted as if us as white voices
are experts
mm-hmm. or are trying to come off as experts. I realize a lot of our content is like we're psychologists, and so we have an expertise in that area. And so we can come off with authoritative voices a lot. Here's the facts and here's what we know. And I just want everyone listening to know that this is not one of those episodes. This is one of those episodes where you're coming along with us on our own knowledge journey.
Thank you for saying that. I think that's super important. And it also made me think a little bit about how I approached researching this episode, which was trying to put less of what I'm going to talk about here at the beginning in my words, and to actually give credit to the folks who are black and spoke from their experience and what they have contributed. So there are two major resources that I used to prep at least the historical piece and the experiential piece. And that is first Shudder's documentary Horror Noir that came out in 2021, which is really awesome. I mean, it has Tony Todd, Keith Davidson, Jordan Peele. There's also a lot of black women on this documentary. So many great people who spoke about their experiences and spoke to the history.
It's actually Keith David.
Keith David. Thank you. I know I was saying that right or wrong. You know, he was in The Thing among so many others.
He's so great.
He's so young in The Thing. And then, Tony Todd is just a presence. He's just
and they also made that into a series.
They did in an anthology. Yeah. So in 2020, no, sorry, this is 2019, 2021, they did a 6-part anthology. And it's basically like 6 different horror shorts that are all black horror, which I haven't gotten through, but I really want to watch. So I stumbled upon that I had already seen Horror Noir and went back and rewatched it. And then I also went on to YouTube, and there is a narrative by a woman by the name of Princess Weeks. And she did a video cast on black horror. It's called Black Horror or Black Trauma. Mm. And so she did a really great reframing of things. So a lot of the information that I'm talking about today, I just want to make sure that people understand it's coming from those voices and not from me, although I have interpreted some of the things that they've said clearly to just put it in my own words. Mm-hmm. But Princess Weeks talks about is how black horror films pull from the black experience. And the question comes down to, does the audience always want trauma, or do they always want how race, class, et cetera, play a part in the framing? And if so, does this allow for escapism? Mm. And so where is the line and how much history should be embedded without harming or judging? And I thought that was a really cool way of framing that, because I think that I've spoken about that regarding the queer experience in horror and how queer people have made queer horror films, at least the origins of it, were that the queer folks were the victims and there's trauma attached. And now we're seeing an evolution of mm-hmm. queer horror where they may also be the perpetrator or they may be the final person or whatever. So just wanted to say that. My understanding, and I have seen this film, and Shannon, you probably have as well, just because you're someone with also deep history of film and understanding film, is that although the film Birth of a Nation is not considered a horror film, to much of the Black community, Birth of the Nation of a Nation is the ultimate horror film. If people don't know what it is, it's a controversial film that depicts the American Civil War and its aftermath from a white supremacist perspective. The film follows the lives of two families, the Stonemans from the North and the Camerons from the South, who are friends before the war but end up fighting on opposite sides. The film portrays the assassination of Lincoln, the rise of the Ku Klux Klan, and the oppression of African Americans as heroic events. This film, the reason why this film is really a horror film is that, one, it was a box office success. It was mainstream. And Professor Alan Rice, who's a Birth of a Nation expert at the Institute for Black Atlantic Research at the University of Central Lancashire, has been organizing a series of symposia on the film. It made history by becoming the first film ever to be screened at the White House during Woodrow Wilson's presidency. But it was revolutionary for another reason. It was very important that it was the first full-scale long narrative using a lot of new techniques of filmmaking, says Rice. But it was also a political film, and it promoted itself as the closest to truth that a film can get. It started the narrative, or exacerbated the narrative, about the Black man being a predator of white women, how Hollywood set up Black lives as deficient, and they wanted Black actors to be what they believed Black people to be. And that comes out of Horror Noir, the documentary. So they talk about in this article how, for all its magnificence, what is inescapable in any assessment, the Birth of a Nation is the troubling racism that leaps off the screen. So Ellen Scott, author of Cinema Civil Rights, says the film is one of the most racist films ever made. It depicts lynching as a positive thing. The politics of the film was essentially to say certain Black people are worthy of being lynched. In that sense, it's extremely racist. Professor Rice also finds the specifics of the Black man who's lynched troubling, a character by the name of Gus, who's actually a white actor in blackface. He's the Black rapist figure who is the stereotype of the Black man whose eyes are only for white women, and this played deeply into the pervasive fear of just how white women should endlessly fear the Black man. Yeah. So I wanted to give some of that history of just how Black people first entered the silver screen in general, and how it was through a very racist white lens. The second film, important to mention, is a film by the name of Ngaji. And Ngaji was a film that was actually created by a man by the name of Spencer Williams, a Black man. He was on the show Amos and Andy. And it centers in an area of the Congo jungle to investigate reports of a gorilla worshiping tribe. And after many dangerous adventures, they came upon the tribe they sought, only to watch as a virgin is sacrificed to a huge gorilla who takes her away. The expedition follows the gorilla in an attempt to save the woman. So it's essentially mating between ape and human as the origin of the Black race. It's considered the first Black horror film. What was remarkable about this film, though, is that it starred a Black actress in the role of a scientist, and she had been taming an ape in her basement. It was revolutionary in the sense that it showed Black middle class who were well-spoken, successful, lived as scientists and lawyers. So although there's this exploitative thing happening over here, it was the first time we saw Black people on the screen being depicted in a way that they were like educated.
Yeah, it was the first science fiction horror film with an all-Black cast.
Yes.
And an incredibly racist topic.
An incredibly racist topic.
I think it's called Son of Ngaji, 1940, right?
That's the second one.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah, so I think there's two.
Gotcha.
In horror noir, they also talk about how Creature from the Black Lagoon was another example of the creature representing anything that wasn't white, and King Kong, also thought to be a metaphor for Blackness. So time starts to pass, and we start to see more Black films, we come across something called the Blaxploitation film. So regardless of the subgenre, it actually spawned from race movies. And these were films that started appearing in like the 1930s and 40s. And they were meant to segregate films featuring all Black cast from mainstream Hollywood. And these films already had the element of horror integrated into them. And over time, they transcended into their own subgenre, mostly in the 50s and 60s. And then everything in 1968 changed with Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah.
It was a zombie apocalypse with the protagonist played by Dwayne Jones. However, there was this underlying, a white woman feels fearful of a Black man even when he's trying to help her. So she's trapped in the house, right? He's heroic in the sense, but what you're trying to figure out through this movie is she more afraid of the zombies or is she more afraid of him? And his performance demonstrated how a Black man could actually take charge and not wait for a white person to save him or call the shots. And this was really big because it was during the civil rights movements of the 60s and 70s, including MLK's assassination in 1968. So the film was timely and therefore part of its success. So for the first time, the Black character was the hero. And what's interesting as well is that Romero didn't write this character to be Black, but believed that he was the best actor, that Dwayne Jones was the best actor to show up for the part on that day. And from there, the Black person or the Black community now knew that they could actually see themselves on screen in a different way. Black audiences grew, and then the 70s brought that Blaxploitation even further. And to not belabor it, the American International Pictures, AIP, played a pivotal role in developing the Blaxploitation film. And they started to develop films like Blackula, Blackenstein. Blackula was one of the... Had you ever seen Blackula?
I did.
It's
so fun.
It's one of the first horror films I ever saw.
Well, you know, it's funny. I was just going to interject and say that my stepdad loved Night of the Living Dead. And I think that was the first Black hero I'd ever seen on screen when I was a kid, because he loved that movie. So I wasn't allowed to watch it, of course, but you know.
And then there was Scream, Blackula, Scream.
It was a time when we did not shelter our children as much.
That's true.
So I could walk through the room and sit down and watch parts of it, you know, until he became aware of me. And then he would kick me out. But I do remember that being probably one of the first Black people I ever saw as a hero in a movie, right?
Yeah.
And I wasn't overly exposed to horror movies at that age either. And I've talked about my love of the movie Alien and stuff like that. But I think that he's one of the first heroes I ever saw.
Oh, yeah.
In horror movies. So that's an interesting memory for me to have. And I also wanted to clarify, I'm going to unconfuse myself because I wasn't clear about it, that Ngaji, like you said, there was the first one and it was in 1930. Mm-hmm. And then in 1940 was The Son of Ngaji. And that's the one I was talking about. Apparently it was the first science fiction.
Got it. Okay.
I just, because that was probably confusing to listen to as well.
These are really old. But,
so I wanted to clarify that.
But Blackula was one of the, you know, starred a young William Marshall. He was an African prince.
That was such an interesting movie.
Yeah, it was. And so AIP, this independent studio, starts to just remedy their lack of funds because they're dying as a production company. They just start to mass produce these Blaxploitation films. And so, you know, combined with the momentum of the civil rights movement, the Black Power movement, the Black Panthers spurred Black artists to reclaim power over their image and institutions through these films, even though they were very exploitative. It's like, hey, we're going to take our power back and we're going to own those images. And so those, I remember those early films. And then, you know, obviously we progress through the 80s with People Under the Stairs and Candyman, and then all the way to Jordan Peele, which we can talk about. But I just wanted to give a little bit of that early history so people knew it was a pretty long trajectory of being looked at as a monster for a very long time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I think, Kathy, that you have some horror facts to do, a little thing we like to call
Blackula Facts with Girl. They're not all about Blackula, but I had to throw them in there somewhere.
Yep. I'm ready. I'm ready for the Blackula facts.
Number one, how many victims did Candyman kill across three films?
How many victims? Oh, boy. Okay.
Number two, the American black comedy follows three frat boys as they venture to the wrong side of the tracks in the hope of hiring a stripper for a college party.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Number three, how does Akasha in Queen of the Damned attack her victims?
Okay.
Number four, which movie stars a doctor who's stabbed by his research assistant with a cursed African dagger, and the wound turns him into a vampire?
Okay.
And then number five, which black horror film is known to be the first black horror film with a black lead actor in a role that wasn't centered around his race?
All right. So for those of you who may not have listened to the show before, at the end of this show, Kathy will give us the answers.
Black it up,
okay. I think we wanted to move into then just basically into an appreciation mode. Some of the films that we personally really appreciate that are considered black horror films. And the first one that I would like to mention is a movie that I've talked about on this show before, but I only saw it a couple of years ago. It's a 2016 movie called The Girl with All the Gifts. Mm-hmm. And it's one of my favorites. The amazing part of this movie is, one, that it's a good movie, and two, that it stars a little girl, a little black girl, as the star of this movie. And she does such a kick-ass job. It's a dystopian, apocalyptic future type of thing. It's also a nature horror because it's about a strange fungus that changed nearly everyone on the planet into flesh-eating monsters. And there's a scientist and a teacher, and they find this girl who seems to be immune to the fungus. And that's our star here, whose name is Senia Nanua. And she's just amazing in this. She's the one they're like, wait a minute, why isn't she a flesh-eating monster? Huh? And so then, of course, then she becomes hunted and they want to study her. And that's what happens when you're an anomaly in science. Mm. A series of events happens. I won't spoil it for you if you haven't seen it. And they all begin to sort of try to save humanity. So it's one of those, like a big Marvel movie, only not.
Oh.
You know, like those are big goals, right? Saving humanity. That's yes. Like big goals. I just really enjoy this movie and I wanted to share it with you guys again. If you haven't seen it, I very much recommend it.
I've heard a lot about this. I don't think I've seen it, but I've heard numerous things about it.
It's a good one if you can catch it sometime.
There's a movie that came out in 2020. I know you've seen it too, because I believe we watched it on Discord, but it's a movie called His House.
Ah, love it.
Yeah. And it's directed by Remy Weeks, story by Felicity Evans. The film tells a story of a refugee couple from South Sudan struggling to adjust to their new life in an English town that has an evil lurking beneath the surface. You know, this movie is all atmosphere.
It was such a good movie.
My God. It really speaks to, you know, I think about Princess Weeks, the woman who did the YouTube bit that I watched, and how she talks about how, you know, black horror, or black trauma, and where's that line? And I think this movie did a really good job at sort of balancing, because much of the horror comes from trauma in this film, and trying to go somewhere else as refugees and that history following them, and then feeling as though it's literally creating something supernatural in the home.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of torment, emotional torment that's happening between this couple. And there really is very little dialogue in this movie.
Yeah, I love that movie. The first time I ever saw it, I was by myself sitting watching it. And it is an effective horror movie.
It really is.
Beyond the trauma of immigration and the comment on what home is, right? It is an effective horror movie. It scared me. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I really like that movie too. I don't think we get out of this conversation without liking the movie Get Out.
Oh, come on.
It's so fucking good. So coming up in the next couple of months, we're going to do an episode on Jordan Peele. And we did one a very long time ago, but new movies have come out and his movies are so effective. And I just fell in love with the movie Get Out. And I thought it was just so transformative for me to be able to listen to the message of racism and hear it and acknowledge it and possibly attempt to understand what it would be like to be that aggressed against. And then also plus a really fucking good movie. Like, that was really amazing for me when I first saw this movie. And I was so appreciative and became an instant fan and have now watched everything he's made.
Oh, it's so incredible.
And will continue to do so.
He did this really amazing thing, too, that I think was somewhat unspoken, at least to the white audience up until this point. Probably spoken about quite a bit within the black community. But how, like you were saying, how aggressed, but then in the same breath, exploiting them for their strengths.
It was really powerful,
right? The way we've abused black athletes.
There was not, I love how Jordan says in the interviews, you know, there's not one good white person in this film.
No.
He's like, I didn't know how people were gonna, you know, if they were gonna, you know, like kick me out of Hollywood or what they were gonna do, but like, there's no good white person in this movie. It was so refreshing, honestly.
Yeah, there wasn't anyone saving them.
No, to be called on our shit as a culture, to be called on our shit. I was there for it at the time, and I still am, and it still remains one of my favorite horror movies.
It's a good one. I think that this next one I'm going to talk about, the movie is fine, but I'm excited for Jordan Peele to remake it because it was one of his favorite films when he was a kid and always wanted to, that I think he had mentioned was one of the influences into going into what he did, which is the movie The People Under the Stairs.
Mm-hmm.
Two adults and a juvenile break into a house occupied by a brother and sister and their stolen children. They must fight for their lives. So this was remarkable in the sense that it was a Wes Craven film and he gave the lead to a young black boy.
Right.
Who essentially becomes the hero of this movie. And that was just so unlike anything that had ever been done.
Mm-hmm.
The movie's weird. And again, the white people in this movie are really just cringeworthy. You know, when you watch the end of the movie, Wendy Robbie, who plays the sister or the wife, or they have such a weird relationship. It's like this weird incestuous thing. She doesn't say it, but she goes to say, like, I'm going to kill all you. And then the N word comes out and she looks and now there's like this whole community of people coming at her. Like they've won, you know,
right.
There's some really powerful, the movie's weird.
Yeah.
It's not a movie I'd watch over and over, but there's some really powerful moments in it. And Brandon Quinton Adams, who plays Fool, in the movie, he's so good in it. And mm-hmm. this was unlike, in a very, 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 very young Ving Rhames is also great. Bill yeah. Cobbs is in it. He plays Grandpa Booker. It's a really great cast. Everett McGill is just always creepy, and he's yes. super creepy in this. And then a very, very young A.J. Langer. She was probably the only redeemable white character because she was a child. So if you haven't seen it, it's just one of those like historically black horror films that you should see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's on the list, right? That's a good one. Yeah. I've seen it a few times.
And I think Jordan's redoing it.
It's very much of its time.
Yes. I wonder what, I'll be curious what he does with it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Me too. I wanted to mention that I'm reading a book by Tananarive Due. And she is, well, I've only started reading this book. I'm about 30% through, and it's so good. I want to read all of her other things now. It's a book called The Reformatory, and it's a big book, but it's page turning. It's gripping. It's a horror novel. It's a slow burn, definitely atmospheric, because it's also historical fiction. So it's basically set in Jim Crow Florida, and it follows this kiddo, Robert Stevens Jr., as he's sent to a segregated reform school that is a chamber of terrors, as they say, and the horrors of racism and injustice for the living and the dead. So far, it's really great. It's also really hard to read some in some parts, because in the 30% that I've read, they're very much setting up, you know, the kid gets sent to the reformatory hypothetically for 6 months, and it's a reformatory run by all really violent white men so far. And there are all the things you might imagine that happen with that. What I appreciate about it, it's written in a way that forces you to experience what that would have been like. Mm. And I think that that's really important, because I am not in a place in my life where I would want to be saved from that or ignorant to those things as much as possible. So feeling the feelings that I feel when I read these really difficult passages, I imagine are going to be the emotional arc that I go on as I read this book, and will make it what it's gotten really good reviews and all that. So I can only imagine that the arc of it, the character arc of it, is very important. Plus, it's a horror movie. There's ghosties, as you might imagine in a reformatory of this nature. Mm-hmm. People died. So yeah, there's ghosties, and there's a lot of racism, and it's an interesting book so far. And what I can say, regardless of that, if that's a setting that you would want to read, is it is really well written. Okay. And she's written a bunch of other books. And so now I'm like, dude, where have you been all my life? Yeah, I want to read these, because I like reading books that are horror, but they're also really well written and also emotional. Her name is Tananarive Due. So it's D-U-E.
Okay.
And she's an American author and educator. She won the American Book Award for her novel, The Living Blood. She's just a really good writer. And she was actually in the Shudder documentary, Horror Noir. She is in that documentary, and she's throughout it. She's one of the experts that they talk to. And she's really great. So
great.
I'm a fan.
Nice. I like finding good new authors.
Yeah, we also read a book called Wander in the Dark for our book club, mm-hmm. by a gentleman named Jumada Emile. And it's a teen young adult fiction book. And it was fun too.
I thought it was fun.
It was fun.
It was like a whodunit.
It was a whodunit, and it was a thriller. I mean, it's basically a thriller.
Yeah.
And he also wrote a book called The Black Queen that is apparently very popular, that I have not read at this juncture in time. But yeah, so those are a couple of books that, that's one book I'm reading, and a book we already read. So.
Yeah.
Kathy, unless you have anything else, I think we gave it a shot to try to understand some things and some of our favorite movies. And yeah. I know that in a couple of months, we're going to do an episode on Jordan Peele, just rewatch at least Get Out, Us, and Nope. and discuss what we think about those movies and what we experience with those movies. I just like him and like watching his movies. So any excuse to do that, really.
Yeah.
And now we have some answers to some...
Blackula fat purple.
Unless you think I will know any of the answers, I never know any of the answers. So this will be no different from any other
That's
time.
Right. How many victims did Candyman kill across three films?
12.
Over 20.
Oh, well, okay.
I didn't mention this movie when we were going through the movies because I didn't want to give it away in the question, but I love this movie, just FYI. This American black comedy follows three frat boys as they venture to the wrong side of the tracks in the hope of hiring a stripper for a college party.
I really don't know.
Vamp.
Oh,
with,
my God.
With the young
with
Grace
Eddie
Jones.
Murphy.
With, no, this is, no, that's Vampire in Brooklyn.
Oh, sorry.
Vamp is Grace Jones, and she
is
flipping phenomenal in this role. So they go to a strip club thinking they're bringing a stripper home, and she's a straight-up fucking vampire.
And they bring home her? You know, I probably saw that back in the day.
Maybe it'll be a Discord night. It's a fun one.
Okay.
Vamp is a fun one.
All right. Yeah, if we can find it streaming somewhere.
Okay. How does Akasha and Queen of the Dam attack her victims?
I don't know, but I really remember liking that movie.
Yeah, she's great in this. She either sets them on fire, rips their heart out, or bites something other than the neck.
Oh, there's a variety.
Yeah, just not the straight up. You know, vanilla, I'm going to bite you in the neck.
No.
She just rips their heart out.
She's like, I will kill you any way I want.
She will. And she did. I love that scene where she first comes out of the statue and walks down. Yeah. It's horrifying.
She's so good.
Which movie stars a doctor who's stabbed by his research assistant with a cursed African dagger? The wound turns him into a vampire. I want to say that this is part of the blaxploitation genre.
Oh, okay, I don't know.
It's a movie called Ganja and Hess.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, 1973.
Amazing. That's such an interesting character study.
Yeah. And then number five, which black horror film is known to be the first black film with a black lead actor in a role that wasn't centered around his race?
I don't know.
Night of the Living Dead.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm cautious to say whether something's centered around someone's race or not. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, mostly because Romero was clear in stating, I didn't have an image of race when I created that character.
He ended up just
having to be black. And then it kind of created itself around him because he happened to be black, which changed a lot of the power.
Sure. Changed a lot about the movie, I imagine. Yeah. Mm-hmm. For the better.
For the better.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Terror Talk. My name is Shannon.
And I'm Kathy. Sleep safe, everyone.